This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And we're joined at the outset by Lamar White, the publisher of the Bayou Brief, one of the top investigative reporters in our state, based in the great city of New Orleans. Lamar hails from the equally great hamlet of Alexandria, and he's here to assess the world at large. And, of course, Louisiana remains front and center in many of the searing issues of the day, both locally and nationally. And if you picked up your Advocate today, a column from Stephanie Grace, who's been on the front lines of covering Steve Scalise. She and Lamar White both have been on Steve Scalise's one-yard lines for a few years, well before he was nearly killed in an assassination attempt. But he survived that, and now he is steadfast in his support for his boss. And his boss is a guy who doesn't even have a job right now, Donald John Trump. And Steve Scalise went on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace a few days ago and showed his support for the 45th American president by essentially once again implying that the election was stolen. And by the way, Steve Scalise, along with Garrett Graves, voted to negate the election, as did John Kennedy, as did Mike Johnson, as did Clay Higgins. And Steve Scalise is digging in his boots or his heels, whatever you want to call them, and his support for Donald John Trump. Lamar White, how do you explain this?
It's just a strange cult of personality around the former president. And it just, I guess, reflects how personally powerful he still is within the Republican Party.
Why does an intelligent man like Scalise fall sway to a guy who maybe is not as smart as he is?
I mean, you know, it's hard to answer that in a simple one-sentence answer. You're right. Scalise presumably is a smart man. And, you know, it's sort of insane because the facts are so clear on this. He's claiming that Donald Trump won the 2020 election, and obviously nothing's further from the truth.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Those are the ways to reach Lamar White as we talk with him today. And as we converse with Lamar, a listener's already noted when I mentioned that you and Stephanie Grace have been on Steve Scalise's one-yard line for some time. She says, what are you talking about? Well, tell us the backstory on this, Lamar.
Well, this was in I believe 2014, I published an article on my former website, Sin Lamar. It was a blog site about Scalise attending a 2002 function at the Holiday Inn in Metairie, Louisiana, in Kenner, actually. That was a quote unquote international annual conference for David Duke's Hate Group, the European and American Unity Rights Association, or Euro. He at first denied it. Stephanie Grace followed up that story that I wrote, which Scalise eventually confirmed, by saying that she recalled him telling her once that he was David Duke without the baggage.
David Duke without the baggage.
That's right.
He represents the same area as Mr. Duke did when he was a state representative, and that area has spawned Bobby Jindal and David Vitter, Steve Scalise, David Duke. It's a haven for the well-known Louisiana politicos, and Scalise could very well end up being Speaker of the House. It's expected that Republicans, it's certainly not a done deal, but they have what would be the natural advantage of being the party out of power, and they're only a few seats away from regaining the House. And if that happens, then there'll be a new Speaker of the House who will be a Republican. Kevin McCarthy is a person who is not thought to be a real bright bulb in the room. And I could easily see Scalise elbowing him out of the way and becoming Speaker, Lamar.
Yeah, I could too. I mean, despite all of his posturing on Donald Trump right now, the truth is that Scalise does have some is friends with Cedric Richmond. He's got some ties, bipartisan. He's at a record of at least going through the motions of appearing to be bipartisan, although, you know, his record reflects differently than that. But, yeah, I think that he's generally well-liked, you know, personally on Capitol Hill. So certainly it's possible.
I recall when he was shot that there was a touching display of support from none other than Nancy Pelosi, who mentioned that they actually spoke on a regular basis and talked about their common Italian background. And in these days, that is rare on Capitol Hill, and it actually showed some humanity from Scalise that he would actually talk to Nancy Pelosi, who's considered to be a terrible person by just about every other member of our delegation. Remember, it was John Kennedy who called the extremely intelligent Ms. Pelosi. He said of her, "It must suck to be that dumb." Well, Steve Scalise actually talks with her every now and then, but when it comes to the public front, he is all in for Donald Trump. And he voted to negate an election that was legitimately held. And it's amazing that all the election chicanery that allegedly was going on, Lamar, went on in states that Trump lost. None of it happened in Louisiana, where he won by almost 400,000 votes. There wasn't one ill-gotten vote in Louisiana, but in Arizona and Georgia and Nevada, oh, it was just awful.
It's funny how that works too, and you know the machines that those other states voted on, those was it whatever they're called, that company that they all hate,
Dominion.
We have the same machines. Yeah, Dominion voting systems. We have the same machines in Louisiana, and you know presumably those same machines helped reelect Steve Scalise in 2020.
That is true. So was Scalise an illegitimate congressman? Well, based on what he is saying, he basically, you're right, he's attacking the very company that made him a congressman by virtue of a vote count that nobody has challenged in Louisiana. I'm sure he won fair and square. I'm sure Trump won fair and square in Louisiana, and Joe Biden won the overall election in a landslide, not even close.
Right.
But last week in Iowa, President Trump had one of these rallies, and there was a governor of Iowa supporting him, and 88-year-old Charles Grassley out there backing Donald Trump on his claims of voter fraud. It is a remarkable situation we're in right now.
And to think that we saw this telegraphed in advance, I mean, months and months, if not years in advance, that this would be Donald Trump's response if he lost, that he would just say that it was stolen from him, even if there was no evidence of that. So we were warned. It's just kind of funny.
A listener notes that after the 2016 election, which Trump lost by almost 3 million votes to Hillary Clinton as far as the overall vote count, there was a commission formed to look into that because Trump claimed there were 5 or 10 illegal votes, a million illegal votes cast for Hillary Clinton. Of course, none cast for him. And that commission found absolutely nothing, Lamar, absolutely nothing.
And Trump's own administration referred to the 2020 federal election as the most secure election in American history.
Well, anyway, Steve Scalise is going to go to the mat for Donald Trump, and he believes it's good politics in Louisiana, and Lamar, he may be right.
Yeah, he may be.
He may be right, and he may end up being Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. And another listener notes that if Mr. Scalise were to get in the race for governor for 2023, the race would be over, and that may be right. I think he would be an overwhelming favorite if he decided he wanted to be governor of Louisiana.
Yeah, I would assume that the field would probably clear for him.
Yeah, it would be his for the taking. But Speaker,
but why do that when you're in line to be in, you know, House leadership like he is?
But he has to push out Kevin McCarthy.
Right. Right.
But McCarthy, remember, after the insurrection, McCarthy, who of course voted against an investigation of the insurrection, as did Scalise, McCarthy pretty much blamed it on Donald Trump, and then not so long later, he was at Mar-a-Lago kissing the ring of the Donald. 877-217-5757, John in Lake Charles, you are on with Lamar White. Good morning, John.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Jim, I was just wondering if you had this same kind of disgust for the Russia theories that we saw about, you know, Russia hacking the 2016 election?
Well, I don't think there was a claim by the Democrats that that included anything that would have cost Hillary Clinton the election. There were some claims of that magnitude, but Trump is saying he won an election that he lost by 7 million votes. He lost by the same amount that Michael Dukakis did in 1988. And if Dukakis had been going around the country crying voter fraud, John, people would have put him in a straitjacket. They would have said, this man's lost his mind. And there is no logical way that a rational person, especially a member of Congress like Mr. Scalise, an intelligent man, can come to the conclusion that the election was legitimately stolen, unless it's good politics. And I think that's where we are. But I appreciate you calling. Please keep calling. We'll be back. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing. If you'd like to talk to Lamar White in our remaining time with him, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Bill Huey writes, I'd love to see President Trump installed as Speaker of the House, trying to learn the nuances of parliamentary procedure as well as House rules. Now, he could be, Lamar White, he could be installed as Speaker.
That's right. Anybody could.
He could.
An American citizen, you know.
But as someone said, why would he need to be installed as Speaker when he has a puppet who will be at the Speaker if Republicans regain control of the House?
Yeah, and it's also just, I don't think it matches his personality. It's a little more difficult to be an autocratic Speaker than it is to be an autocratic President.
It would be amusing. To have him in the State of the Union addresses sitting right behind Joe Biden, though. Wouldn't that be something?
Kamala Harris, yeah.
Well, sitting right next to Kamala Harris. Yeah, okay. David in Atlanta. David, do we have him? David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Lamar White. Hi, David.
There's an article in the New York Times science section regarding the COVID-19. You know, I've heard on Hate Radio that if you've had the virus, and by the way, even a mild case can cause severe physical consequences. But they're telling people if you've had the virus, you have antibodies and you don't need the vaccine. And that's absolutely not true. Some people have no antibodies after contracting the virus. And at most, the antibodies last for a year. So even those people definitely need to take the vaccine.
All right. Well, this is another issue that has taken a political context, vaccines or not. And it is unfortunate, Lamar.
It's another example of disinformation and misinformation being spread, particularly on the political right. It's really a shame that public health has been politicized the way it has been. This obviously happened under the Trump administration when Trump made wearing a mask seem like a political act.
Well, next year we will determine whether Democrats regain control or retain control of the House and the U.S. Senate. And in the Senate, Democrats have a numerical advantage because there are more Republicans up for reelection. One of those is John Neely Kennedy. He has an opponent, Lamar. What do you know about this young man, Luke Mixon? So we're headed for, we had Kennedy Nixon in 1960. We've got Kennedy Mixon in 2022.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I'm actually going to speak with him later today, so I hesitate to say anything about him until I get a chance to talk with him. I've never spoken with him before. I know he's a young man from Avoyelles Parish originally. I like that. And a military man. So it'll be interesting to see how he rolls out his sort of introductory tour of Louisiana.
Well, and he will be on this show 1 week from today. Luke Mixon, he is a military veteran, and that always helps, and it got John Bel Edwards to the governor's mansion. I don't think he would have gotten there had he not had the West Point pedigree. Now, there are other matters that are of interest, and Lamar always finds new nuggets for at the Bayou Brief, and he's been on the trail of the late and controversial, some would say sinister figure from Louisiana, Carlos Marcello. And it turns out the chair of the Republican Party has kind of a loose connection to one Carlos Marcello, Louis Gervich. What's that connection, Lamar?
Louis Gerbich's connection? Yeah. Well,
Jim Garrison. Jim Garrison, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a circuitous one, but I mean, it's Carlos. Gerbich's family had for many years, I think still does, a private security firm. And I believe that it was his father or grandfather was the chief detective for one Jim Garrison during the Clay Shaw trial, which was, of course, the one that was made famous, more famous, I should say, by the Oliver Stone film JFK. He actually quit in protest right before the trial. It made a lot of headlines at the time. It was big news all over the country. It's just an interesting story. There's a few other interesting things about that family in particular that I've discovered that just haven't been, affiliated with any of the news that he's generated as chair of the Louisiana Republican Party.
And a listener notes that Benson Bruno, the gentleman, friend of both Lamar and me, a conservative, died August 29th of COVID-19, and that's unfortunate. But he, of course, was Carlos Marcello's nephew. But Gerbich, I think you have reported that there is a connection to the Gerbich family and none other than Jim Jones, the Jonestown
guy?
Yeah,
this is what I find really interesting is that in, I guess that was, 1978, something like that, Jim Jones, the cult leader in Guyana, Gerbich had a young daughter who had joined the movement and was there. And unfortunately lost her life. But he actually had planned a sort of private security force to come in commando style and rescue all of these Americans. Unfortunately, they were 2 weeks too late in their planning. But if you search through some news archives, you'll find national news coverage where he talks about this on the record. It's quite interesting.
All right. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Lamar. Hi, Dan.
Yes. What does it say about the education system in Louisiana that it's good politics for Steve Scalise to cling to the big lie?
It's not just Louisiana, Dan. It's every red state in the country. These lawmakers are scared to death of Donald Trump. It is curious that not one of them will stand up to the consummate bully. But anyway, they don't.
Yeah, just waiting for someone to finally point out that the emperor wears no clothes.
Well, Trump was big into these beauty pageants, and as we know, had a lot of things to say about female anatomy. I think it would be appropriate for him next time he's at Mar-a-Lago to be photographed in a swimming suit, and then we would see the 45th president in all his glory. 877-217-5757 for Lamar White. A listener notes that a guy who made some substantial contributions to the current governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, the guy's name's Bob Dean, that he has some Alexandria connections, Lamar, the nursing home guy who's in a lot of trouble right now.
Bob Dean is from Alexandria, went to high school, Bolton High School, and purchased the Hotel Bentley, which he owned for several years, spent a lot of money renovating it, and then it flooded, and he closed it for, 10 years, something like that. He wanted an outrageous amount of money for it. Obviously finally sold it and no longer owns anything in Alexandria, much to the relief of the people of Alexandria, because he was not a very good owner of the Bentley when he had it.
Well, he is a guy who has been pretty much low-key, despite being a major player. Now, when my friend Gus Weil was representing him, he got him more high-profile. The Republic Tower in Baton Rouge became Dean Tower, and he started calling all of his properties Deanopolis. But for the most part, he's kept a low profile, but right now he's getting the kind of publicity most people wouldn't like, Lamar.
I think I mentioned this to you off the air, that in Alexandria, he painted himself riding a horse in the ceiling of the Hotel Bentley, which I always found somewhat strange. It's no longer there, for better or worse. But
Well, he had oil paintings in all of his office buildings, one of which we used to have our headquarters of the Louisiana Radio Network on 3rd Street at the State National Life Building. And I remember Ben Taylor down the street said that's costing him business, having those oil paintings of himself in the lobby. But hey, you know, sometimes you got as Gus Weil, the aforementioned political consultant and public relations genius, says, sometimes, Jim, you got to put some sizzle with the steak.
Right.
And Bob Dean is now potentially a target of a criminal investigation, and that's serious business. And we wish the man well. He's in a tough spot. And in fairness, evacuating people from nursing homes during a hurricane is a delicate thing to do. But it didn't work out well. It did not work out well.
It doesn't sound like they did it delicately.
It does. So. Thank you, Lamar. Let's keep talking. You're always a pleasure to catch up with, and let's do it again soon.
Lamar, all right, White. Great. Thanks, Jim.
Bayou Brief. Back after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org. If you'd like to reach Mike Shepherd, who's with us for a segment, the head of the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame, which has hundreds of members. I guess getting close to thousands of members.
Getting close to 300.
300 members.
I've been very selective because I wanted to be.
Well, you say you've been very selective. Did you decide who gets in? Basically,
sort of.
You're a panel of one?
I've had a board off and on for a long time, and I've found out a lot of my board was more interested in special interest.
All right, well.
Like their children.
But you're in the Hall of Fame. Who decided to put you in, Mike?
My board at the time did it as a birthday present.
Well, that was a very nice gesture.
I turned 65, and they said, hey.
So, and if you go to the kiosk at the Baton Rouge Airport, which Mike worked extremely hard on, he is one of the featured people in the kiosk. And Mike, for many years, was a music promoter. And he has a beautiful book, and it is an appealing book, hardback copy I have here in my hands, Shepherding the Music by Mike Shepherd. And all of the Louisiana luminaries, at least many of them, I wouldn't say all, but some of the biggest and best in the business are on the cover, and we'll get to that. But a listener the other day, when we were going to visit with you on Monday, noted that there aren't that many rappers, but you have Master P in, don't you?
I made a point for all the work he has done giving to children, not here, but in San Diego, putting Master P in for the work he's done.
Well, he's certainly been an extremely talented artist, and you need to turn your phone off, too. We are on the radio, 877-217-5757, to visit with Mike Shepherd, the president of the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame. But The Advocate ran a story the other day. The number one album in the country right now is from NBA Youngboy from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who's had some problems with the law. He's only 21 years old. In fact, he'll be 22 on October 20th, which is a week from today. Based on his popularity, it would seem he's Hall of Fame quality, Mike.
Based on the popularity, but based on his problems with the law, he's not.
But don't some of these other people you have in the hall, some of them have had some brushes with the law?
Not really.
No? No? There's a morals clause as well. But
it's not a morals clause. This is creating an atmosphere of good people who have done good things.
Is Johnny Cash in the hall?
Johnny's not from Louisiana.
No, he's from Arkansas, but of course he had a Louisiana connection sometimes.
And he did start in the Hayride.
And of course, that's correct. And he did serve some time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he's in a lot of halls of fame.
But not ours.
Aaron Neville, did he ever serve any time?
Not that I know of.
So. I don't think so. A listener said that, but I don't believe so. No. 877-217-5757. Freddie Fender did, but is he in the Hall of Fame?
He's Texas.
Yeah, but he got arrested in Baton Rouge and spent time at Angola.
That's why he's not in the Hall.
Okay, well, I think we better move on. But I'm looking at the cover, and I see two gentlemen born November 7th, which is right around the corner. One in 1922, one in 1942. one in Baton Rouge. Actually, he was born in New York, grew up in Baton Rouge. Johnny Rivers, who is Johnny Ramistello, and the other is Al Hurt, 99. I think November 7th should be a Louisiana holiday. Mike Shepard.
There's a lot of dates based on that that could be holidays.
Jimmy Davis, Governor Jimmy Davis is in the Hall of Fame.
That day could be a holiday.
What? Jimmy Davis, who lived in three centuries. Now, that's hard to do. That's hard to pull off. He lived in the 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries. Of course, he was born in 1899 and died in, I think, 2000 or 2001.
Yeah, he passed at 102.
So he did it right, but to do three centuries, there are only a few people on the planet who have ever done that, and one of them is James Davis, who was, of course, an actor and gave us You Are My Sunshine, which is one of the most recorded songs of all time.
And I'm very proud of my wall in my condo to have a letter from Gene Autry that he sent to Jimmy.
Really?
And thanked him for writing the song, because I think it was the Metropolitan Museum in New York had just sent him notice that they were putting his song with an exhibit of You Are My Sunshine, Gene Autry's version.
A lot of people have recorded that song.
And thank Jimmy for writing it and making it possible.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Steve in Collegetown asks if there are any other governors in the Hall of Fame, Louisiana governors. And
Huey Long.
Huey Long? Yeah, well, he was a composer.
He was a composer. He actually sat in his bed with a candlestick phone and would... Mm-hmm. Hum the tune to things while Dr. Carrazzo, who ran
Castro
band
Carrazzo,
in LSU.
Who he stole from the Blue Room at the old Roosevelt Hotel, right?
And the story of that is Huey sent his bodyguard to the stage and said, tell the band leader to come to my table now, bring him over.
Yeah.
He brought him over. He said, you can quit this gig. You're working for me now.
And he did. And his family is still here in town.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
His granddaughter's a fan of the Hall of Fame and has been very instrumental in helping. And when I inducted them, I brought Nina, Dr. Carrazzo's granddaughter, and Kay, Huey's granddaughter.
Well, you've done a good job of promoting the great musicians of Louisiana, and when people talk about our culture, and often on this show we reflect on some bad stuff, the music, the food, the music probably first and foremost, that's what separates us from other states.
It really does, more so than the food. Other states have great food, not necessarily as great as ours, but the music we have separate.
877-217-5757 is your number. Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Good morning, Henry.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Mike. I hope y'all are having a great day. Look here, I heard Mr. Mike just now say that Gene Autry wrote former Governor Jimmy Davis a letter thanking him for writing You Are My Sunshine, which is fine and dandy, except Jimmy Davis didn't write it. He bought it from some old drunk for $40.
Well, there is that story out there that Jimmy Davis was not the original author of You Are My Sunshine.
There is that story, but I also was given an affidavit written in the office of Jimmy's brother, who was an attorney in Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was witnessed and signed by several people and notarized, and simply said, Charlie said he was there, and he said, Governor Davis invited me to his home,
right?
And at that time, he played guitar and sang the song to me so I could get the words and the chords correct. I did.
Well, You Are My Sunshine, published January 30th, 1940, by the way, exactly 1 year before the birth of Dick Cheney, is a song copyrighted and published, and the two authors are listed, Jimmy Davis and Charles Mitchell. And according to BMI, it's been recorded by more than 350 artists, translated into 30 languages, and in 1977, the Louisiana State Legislature decreed that You Are My Sunshine would be a state song to honor Jimmy Davis. Now, we have other state songs now.
Yes, you're right.
But that's a song that is synonymous with Louisiana. Now, a listener notes that Garth Brooks calling Baton Rouge is now synonymous with LSU football and with Baton Rouge. Is Garth Brooks going to get in the Hall of Fame?
He's from Oklahoma.
Well, but he did a song about Baton Rouge.
This is meant for Louisiana artists.
So you get, but Johnny Rivers is from New York.
Johnny Rivers moved down here and had all his fame down here.
Well, I wouldn't say all of his fame, but he started here. So we ought to claim some of these other people, though.
One day, Steve Cropper came up to me. He was doing a gig with me. Mm-hmm. Steve Cropper from Memphis. And Steve said, "Hey, man, you know, I married a woman from Shreveport 30-something years ago. We're still married and love her to death. Can I get in this?" And I said, "I'll find a place for you, Steve."
All right. Tom in Denham Springs. Tom, you're on with Mike Shepherd of the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame.
Good morning, Mike. It's Tom Aswell.
Hey, Tom.
How you doing? I just wanted to let everybody know that when I wrote my book, Louisiana Rocks, Mike Shepherd was a tremendous help, and he was very instrumental in that book getting written, and I'll always appreciate that.
Tom, I was glad to do it. Yeah. I like your book. It's still on my bookshelf.
Tom is a versatile guy, and that was a very good book. And I think that was his first appearance on this show. And sometimes people who write other books are not as kind, but this one is one that I think point is the book for. If you're looking for a chronicle of Louisiana music, shepherding the music is a pretty good place to start.
And Tom, I was going to say that you should get it. You would love it, I think.
Tom in Woodland Ridge. Tom, you're on with Mike Shepherd.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Fine.
Similar question to those that have been asked about people who've spent significant time in Louisiana but not necessarily born in Louisiana, like Alex Chilton or Susan Cowsill or even Ray Davies of the Kinks spent quite a few years in New Orleans.
As did Jimmy Buffett.
Correct. And, yeah, I knew Alex. Alex has passed.
He did that song, The Letter, when he was 16 years old, didn't he, with the box tops, and he sounded like he was 56.
He knew how to sing, and he knew how to act in the studio, obviously.
All right. We're going to spend a few more minutes with Mike Shepherd, and then we're also excited to hear from the biographer, Lawrence Lehmer, who's taken aim at a Louisiana notable, Truman Capote, back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Finishing up with Mike Shepherd, president of the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame. His book is Shepherding the Music. And then we'll go to the incomparable biographer, Lawrence Lehmer. Avery and Crowley's been waiting patiently. Avery, you're on the air with Mike Shepherd. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. First, let me thank you for all that you do to bring recognition to Louisiana music, Louisiana songwriters. I really appreciate it as someone who dabbles with guitar and bass from time to time
and
as well.
Avery, I haven't talked to you in years.
I know. It's been a while.
Thank
I
you
see
for
you
all,
on
the,
Facebook
all
the
beads
time.
You threw on my camera.
I'm happy to do it. Well, I'm called to drop a few names to see if either A, they've already been inducted, or B, would be considered. And the first one I've got to drop is Bill Davis of Dash Rip Rock. He's a great songwriter.
Dash Rip Rock is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I thought so. I wasn't 100% sure. Also, the Imagination Movers. Kyle Malasson plays drums with them and played with Dash Rip Rock for a while, but they're from New Orleans.
I know about them. I've never heard them, but I guess you could say they're under consideration because I do know of them.
All right. And the third one?
And then the third one is Phil Anselmo of Pantera from New Orleans, but it's a heavy metal band.
I know who Phil is. I've been recommended that several times and considered it and still consider it.
All right. Well, since you're making the call, I think we've got two new inductees based on Avery Davidson calling. And thank you, Avery, for calling.
Thank you, Avery.
And once again, the book is Shepherding the Music. Thank you, my friend, Mike Shepherd. Good to visit with you. And we switch gears. We turn the page to Lawrence Lehmer. And he is a remarkable man who's written many biographies, and the latest is about Truman Capote, native of New Orleans. Truman Capote spent most of his life in other places, but he was born in the great city of New Orleans September 30th, 1924, and he was a writer of great renown and a character of equal renown, and he had people in his orbit who were fascinating as well, and the book is an interesting twist, Capote's Women, A True Story of Love, Betrayal, and a Swan Song for an Era. Good morning, Lawrence.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to visit with you. Well, Truman Capote, as I mentioned, he had all kinds of characters in his orbit, and I know he's buried at Westwood Memorial Cemetery with Johnny Carson's ex-wife, one of Carson's ex-wives, and he had lots of women who were in his orbit as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of heterosexual men, they want to sleep with women, but they don't want to spend much time with them, and they don't want to listen to them. And Truman was different. Truman really loved women.
Well, he was gay, I surmise, but he spent a lot of time with women, and you're right, a lot of heterosexual guys don't appreciate the company of women, but you're right, they'll sleep with them, but they won't hang out with them. But
right.
But he was friends with some of the most beautiful, talented, and accomplished women in the world, wasn't he?
And rich, these women that he knew, these seven women he called his swans, they all were sought to marry some of the richest men in the world, and they did. And they invited him to their world, into their incredible states, into their yachts, into their planes, all over the world he went with them. While he was with them, he's thinking, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a masterpiece about them called Answered Prayers. So every moment he was with them, in his own mind, he was taking notes.
What happened to Answered Prayers?
He couldn't do it. He tried for years, and he couldn't do it. If I'd known him, I'd have said, Truman, it's not working out. Go back and write a book about your failure to write the book and talk about the women in that sense. That way he would have had his book. He didn't do that. People nagged him, what's happening to your book? He'd be lying in bed looking at movie magazines, and the phone would ring, and he'd say, I'm working on the book. He didn't do it. He was totally blocked. So he published, people nagged him, and so in November 1975, he published a chapter in Esquire in which he absolutely savaged these women. He told these stories about them. Some were true, some were not true. They were so ugly that they wanted nothing more to do with them. It was after that that he sort of turned to drugs and dissipation and died in Joanne Carson, Johnny Carson's ex-wife's arms in 1984.
And he was only 59 years old by today's standards.
Right.
A babe. He lived a rough life, mostly of his own doing.
Yeah. No, really all of his own doing.
Well, he was a man who was constantly on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, these other programs, and he was a character, and he was from New Orleans, and he wrote In Cold Blood, which remains one of the most talked about books of the 20th century, and some people believe he had a hand in writing To Kill a Mockingbird with another great female writer, Harper Lee. What about that story?
I don't believe that for a minute. But Harper Lee was very helpful to him in Cold Blood. She went out with him to Nebraska, where he was researching the murder of the Clutter family, and he was this. I mean, he has his scarf that goes down to his ankles and that voice. I mean, you imagine nobody ever seen anybody like that in Nebraska. And she went out there, and Harper Lee, and she was like somebody you sit next to in church. So she became friendly with these people, and through that he was able to be friendly. And she took notes on her own, and she came back with 150 pages of notes that was crucial to him to write the book.
And he grew up with her, didn't he?
Yeah, in Monroeville. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, in Monroeville, Alabama. Harper Lee and Truman Capote as kids. But
yeah,
it is a remarkable story. But as he became famous, and he became famous young in life, remember 1966 when In Cold Blood became the talk of the world, he was only 32 years old, and he had already written other well-received books. But But some of the people he hung out with that are mentioned in the seven women that you note are more famous than others. One of them is the sister of Jackie Kennedy, Lee Radziwill. Right. What about that relationship?
Well, she's the one he met the latest. He had lunch with her the first time in 1962 when her sister was first lady. And Lee was so jealous of Jackie, she could hardly speak. It consumed her life. It's the strangest thing because, look, she's married to a Polish prince. She's got all this money. She's got these homes, everything you think you could want. But she felt her life was a disaster because of Jackie. Jackie didn't do anything wrong. She was the first lady. She was so beloved, you know. But boy, Lee couldn't deal with that.
What about Pamela Churchill?
Pamela Churchill, who ended up Pamela Harriman, she slept her way through the world with wealthy people, and these men supported her. It's kind of amazing that she was known. Truman said she never read a book in her life, and she'd had an affair with Avril Harriman in World War II in London, okay, when he was married, and after the wife dies. Toward the end, when Harriman is in the early 80s, she marries him. They come to Washington. After he dies, she becomes a big fundraiser for the Democrats, and she's the ambassador to Paris. She ends up the ambassador to Paris and dies one day when she's going for afternoon's swim in the pool, in the hotel pool.
My goodness. Now, as I mentioned, Lawrence Leamer, our guest, who's written this book, Capote's Women, has taken his biographical talents to focus on pop culture figures like the Reagans, the Kennedys, Johnny Carson, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And what in the world drew you to Truman Capote?
I was going to do a book. I have a friend, Susie Zirinsky, who, if you ever saw the film Broadcast News, she was the hair that was based on her. And she was the first woman president of CBS News. I thought, that's a great subject for a biography. And what she was deciding, and I was only going to do if she cooperated. And while I was waiting, I was doing research, and I read this biography of William F. Paley, the founder of CBS. And it was his wife. Interested me. So I just started looking into that, and then I learned about the Swans and Truman, and I thought, what a book it is. Truman couldn't do it, but if I tell that story myself as nonfiction, I'll really have something. And look, I don't have the masterpiece that Truman could have written, but it's getting some of the best reviews of my life.
Well, you are a guy who has run with the rich and the powerful, as my mother used to say, in high cotton, but Lawrence Leamer, this sophisticated gentleman, also at one time worked in a coal mine in West Virginia, correct?
Yeah, I did. I broke my finger. I'm looking at it right now. And the best, some of the best guys I met in my own life, because if you don't, you know, if they don't like you, if your buddies don't like you, you're not going to last a week.
Next week will be the 96th birthday of one John William Carson, better known as Johnny, and you wrote the book King of the Night, which spent 6 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. What about him was interesting? He was a man who was front and center, perhaps the best-known person in America for 30 years, but yet a lot of mystery about Johnny Carson.
He was a brilliant entertainer, but when that light went off, when the red light went off, he was something different. He was a wife beater. I mean, Joanne Carson showed me the divorce papers. He had to pay to have her chin redone. That's how bad it was. He was a bad drunk. I mean, we all know people like that. They're just perfectly normal. When they're sober, put a couple of drinks in them, and they turn bad. And that's the way he was.
Well, he had another book written about him and is by his lawyer, Henry Bushkin, which was not all that pleasant. And Bushkin will be with us next week. But it is a fascinating.
He was one of my main sources, secretly.
Well, he says he now believes Carson suffered brain trauma when he was a boxer in the service, and maybe that was a problem. But that's tragic to hear those stories. And Truman Capote, I think we knew he was a rogue, and you have confirmed it
right. In
Capote's Women, and Lawrence.
You know what I've learned after half a century of writing. Is don't be jealous of anybody. You think that neighbor who has the fancy car, the big house, you think if you get there, you're going to be happy. It's not, happiness is within you.
Thank you, Lawrence Leamer, one of the best in the business. The book is Capote's Women. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting. Stay safe and stay tuned.